Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
I screwed up the audio on that one. Welcome back, Taxation is Theft. And I have today with me Oscar, who's calling in from Sweden. Oscar's been following and supporting my campaign on Instagram for a while. And we've had some pretty cool conversations. And he wanted to talk a little bit about Sweden because, you know, we always hear about all kinds of European countries and how wonderful their socialism is. So he's got some real insight on that from having lived there and actually seen it. So, Oscar, welcome.
Yeah, hi, thank you.
Yeah.
It's an honor to be on here.
Well, I'm happy to have you. Yeah. Why don't we start out, kind of give us an introduction. Who are you? How did you become an ANCAP? Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a 16-year-old anarcho-capitalist. So I'm both Swedish and Russian, and I basically became an ANCAP because I realized how evil government is and how the Swedish government is just screwing the people over. So it was by the winter of 1819. So it wasn't quite long ago, but...
Okay. So, I guess it's interesting you say the government's screwing people over. That's a common thing that we see around the world, whether it's... It's, you know, whatever country you go to, you hear that. And there's always, you know, there's always people who love the government. But then there's always people who realize, no, it's screwing some of us over here. You guys got to cut it out. So that's awesome. And you're pretty young too. So what got you interested in any of this? Cause I know when I was your age, I didn't care anything about government. I was just like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to play my video games and watch my TV and all that kind of crap.
Yeah, yeah.
What got you interested?
So basically when I was a little kid, about 6-7 years old and just started school, instead of having all of those fancy things internet and iPads and iPhones and all of that, I instead got books. So I read up on the history thing, which got me really interested about society and history, everything in general. So I was reading these heavy history books, but of course history is not infinite. So
right.
When I read up to the Napoleonic Wars, I just switched up to psychology and politics and all of that.
Nice.
So it's started out from a very young age.
So did you ever identify with any other political ideologies, or did you go straight to ANCAP?
No, I was being a lot of ideologies because I was learning it was interesting. So it was very often that I switched ideologies. But yeah. Some of those I've been is a green, I've been a communist, I've been a nationalist, and recently I've come to ANCAP from the far right.
Okay. So I guess, let's see. So it sounds like you're kind of hopping around from different ideologies. And of course we see that because we know, but before we understand that government is evil, we see that, well, hey, look, there's all these creative ways. We shouldn't be enslaved to our jobs and to to the economy, to money, to all these other things. And so it's very attractive to look at some of these other ideologies that say they're going to save us from that. So you mentioned communism. What was it about communism that you liked, and what made you finally decide that wasn't that great?
Well, basically, I got introduced to it through memes. So I was like, it was like more of like a joke.
Okay.
Like a joke thing. So I basically like got indoctrinated into communism.
All right. But
then like one day I decided to actually read, catched up on some communist literature. So I sat down and got an audiobook of the Communist Manifesto. So I was listening through this audiobook. I was just sitting there almost falling asleep and realizing this is crap. This is wrong.
So what specifically? So like you saw some memes. Was there, I guess they say seizing the means of production is one of the things. Was it, you know, do you remember anything specific about it, or was it just kind of like, you know, was there anything specific that got your attention, or were they just funny and you thought they were funny enough to identify with that?
Yeah, well, I in the beginning I thought that was like really funny, but later on I just got brainwashed and indoctrinated by these memes. So I just like went over to the music and like all of that stuff.
Okay, awesome. So let's see, and then what other, you said, what other ideologies did you say?
I've been on the green side. I've been okay. A conservative, a nationalist, a monarchist, a far righter.
Okay, what did, let's go with far right. What did you like about the far right ideology?
Well, when I snapped out of the communist phase, I was like more of a reaction to the communist thing and of like all of the things that the government was doing in Sweden.
Okay.
So the government is quite socialist and quite globalist. So I was like really going the opposite of that. And also like the teachers were trying to brainwash the kids into being loyalist to the government. So it was like a reaction.
Right. Okay. And yeah, that's understandable. We see a lot of that, even in libertarian circles, I see it a lot where if somebody, if they know they don't like something, they often go right to the exact opposite of that, thinking that, you know, that's the right thing to do. But of course, the exact opposite is not always the right place to be because that.
Yeah. You've got like all of these fancy utopias you want to implement, or like in all of these fancy concepts, but then you realize it's not really that good to implement a utopia that might be someone else's dystopia. Right. So like,
yeah, that's the thing. It's always every utopia sounds great for one person and sounds absolutely terrible for somebody else. So, okay, cool. So let's talk a little bit about Sweden, because that's one of the countries that we always hear in the US. You've got these great socialist programs. Everything is wonderful, and we should be more like Sweden. What's the reality of Sweden? What do you like or dislike about it?
Well, let me go a little bit on the history.
Okay.
So Sweden, like the modern political situation in Sweden, began really in the 20th century, the 1900s. So what happened then? We had like few regulations, we had few laws that regulated the society and all of that. So we were quite libertarian, and the king was losing power, and the parliament was growing. And trade was increasing, and you've got like this communist revolution. So a lot of people got inspired. So they got started working and stuff. And taxes, they were below 20 or even 10%, I believe. So we got a huge economic boost. and because of the world wars and because of our neutrality, we got boosted, but like more than we could have if we had been in the war. So the economy was just doing great. So I believe it was just before or like after the end of the Second World War, the welfare program was introduced, the taxes were raised, and all of that, and more regulations and more stuff came. But the economy was still doing quite decent because of this morale from the Soviets. So a lot of people were inspired to build the perfect society. But then in the 90s and early 2000s, it was starting to go, the people starting to wake up from the communistic morale. So the country was starting to do worse, and also they opened up the gates for major immigration, which just started to go to the limit of the welfare system as we see today.
So this is interesting. So you had few regulations and low taxes, and everything was going really well. And then as it's going really well, there's, hey, we have all this money, let's start to tax it, let's start to create all these socialist programs.
Because like you had the Soviet Union, like a neighbor, like, and they're starting to do quite good too in the beginning with the industrialization and all of that. So you had like a huge support for creating the welfare program and all of that.
Okay. So then we start implementing these programs. Now, with the immigration, because that's a really hot topic issue here in the U.S. right now, because we do have a lot of socialist programs. And one of the things that people are worried about is if we allow a lot of people into the country, they're going to become a drain on all of those programs. Is that the only issue that you have with immigration there, or are there other issues?
No, there's a lot of issues, but immigration overall has just become worse and worse over the years. Like when we started immigration, it was like immigration from Finland. It was like truly worker immigration. If you came here, you came here to work. You came to support the country and the economy. So it was like this, the welfare system was kind of upheld and reinforced by this immigration. But then you had like later, the later time, we started to take in all of this Arab immigrants and just generally non-Europeans, which was not used to the culture, to traditions and all of that. But the biggest problem came now with like the Syrian war and stuff. Because what you've got now, you could Sweden's like taking in real ISIS members.
Right. So this is kind of a difficult question on immigration, because when we talk about like the whole idea of anarcho anything is freedom of travel for all people, no borders and that sort of thing. So understanding that these are, you're talking about ISIS members who are dangerous people. Do you see, I guess, you know, there's kind of a conflict there between the ANCAP ideology and the threat of immigration there. Do you think that threat is solely because of socialist programs that are in place, or because of aggression-based foreign policy that's created problems and now it's just blowback? Or do you think that this is a bigger issue that needs to be controlled by limiting people's ability to travel around the world?
Well, this is really a mix of very different factors, one being that most immigrants go on welfare rather than work. And a lot of them have a lot of kids, so they get a lot of money for the kids. The other thing is they're very different cultures. So it creates a cultural conflict and national conflict as well between the two peoples.
So if we were to take, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
So now with the war, you're like, people get damaged from the war, like psychological damage. Like, you're not going to be the same if like a huge bomb drops and kills half your family. So a lot of them are like need
Right.
psychological help, but that's not happening, is it?
Right. And so now that's an interesting problem because some would look at that as they need help, and if you give them help, that's welfare. But I think if you look at it from a more AMCAP perspective, it's no, that is damage that was intentionally inflicted on them, and the person who intentionally, or persons or people or group who intentionally inflicted that damage should be held responsible for the damage that they've created, right? Like if I burn down your house, I'm responsible for building you another house. If I create a serious amount of emotional trauma, I'm responsible for that. So do you think that it's Sweden's responsibility to do any of this? How, what's their involvement in creating this problem?
No, I don't think that Sweden is in any way involved in creating any problem. The more problem is like the United States and Russia and Syria and like all of those countries starting conflicts in the Middle East, which like started the huge immigration wave.
Right. I just kind of laughed at that a little bit just 'cause it's I like I know I'm always critical of the United States and I know a lot of people are critical of me because of that, but it's look, it's not just me, some crazy American who thinks the United States foreign policy is wrong. We have people in other countries who recognize this. And I think it's interesting that Sweden is now, well, I guess you said they're not providing that psychological care, but they're providing socialist care, the through all the welfare programs to people who are refugees that the United States created. So it's almost like Sweden is now cleaning up our mess.
Not well, not really. What the Swedish government solves problem with is money. Everything the Swedish government does is basically throw money on it and it
Right.
will work. If it works, tax it. If it stops working, throw more money. So what you're doing, you're just giving them money to sustain themselves and the family, but they're not going to use that money
Right.
to anything else but material goods.
I guess I should clarify when, I mean, 'cause you're absolutely right. Government always tries to solve problems and they never do. So it sounds like, I guess you could say it really, it depends on if you're a socialist who believes all these programs work, then you would argue that they're cleaning up the United States mess. But what you're pointing out is accurately is that they're not actually cleaning up our mess. You could say attempting to, they're throwing money, they're wasting money trying to clean up a mess that the United States created.
The Swedish government thinks that the immigrants will understand the Swedish culture and integrate if they have a job, which is it's not that smart of a conclusion.
Especially
So
when you're
what we
giving
should.
out free money. Who's going to get a job when you're giving out free money?
Yeah, exactly. And there is like actual jobs just made out of welfare money. So they're not like not real jobs at all.
Interesting. So it sounds like it's a really complicated problem, and it's interesting because as ANCAPs, we always want to point out how bad these programs are and we need to get rid of them.
Yeah, right.
But there's still going to be that problem. So let's say you got rid of all of these welfare programs in Sweden. what do you think would happen with the immigration problem?
Well, I think immigrants would stop coming here as huge numbers as they do now. Because, like, you can see they travel all the way from Greece and Bulgaria and Serbia and, like, all of those Balkan countries to Germany, England and Sweden, just because we have, like, this extensive welfare. So I think a lot of immigration would just decrease, and those that will come here will be citizens that are willing to work and contribute to society as a whole.
Do you think that you're in a dangerous position? Because we've seen all kinds of violence all over Europe from immigrants, you know, coming from Syria and Africa. Do you think that if they were to just stop the welfare programs, that the people who are already there would, you know, somehow turn into some sort of violent revolution? Because now they're stuck. They've already traveled all the way here, and now they're not getting the money that they need to sustain their lives, and they might not want to go all the way back now that they've already been, you know, they've already traveled all the way here. What do you think would happen?
Well, I think that I'm not really sure about what I think about that, but you're right. There is a high probability that there will be like these small caliphates forming around the neighborhoods. We have already seen this in Sweden. There's like small neighborhoods that have, they're technically under Sharia law. Even the police is afraid of going there, like armed, trained and full of muscle dudes are afraid of going into these neighborhoods. So they're almost like independent systems and independent governance under this Islamic law.
Right. Man, so yeah, it's a and huge, like, problem.
Yeah, and they like have guns and all of that as well.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask, how has it affected you personally? Do you live close to one of these areas? Do you feel that you're living in a more dangerous environment now?
Well, luckily I live in the forest, quite far away from any city, any of these Islamic quarters and stuff like that. But I have received multiple death threats, threats for destruction of property and rape threats.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what, I guess, how do you get those threats? Like, who are these people who are even threatening you? Is it just random people or?
Well, they're like these teenagers to young adult Islamists from like all of these caliphates around the country.
Is this like in person? Is this through online, through social media?
Yeah.
A little bit of both?
Yeah. I've been contacted by them from social media, and they found me through social media and all of that. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Man, I'm sorry to hear that. What do you think the solution is at this point, or have you thought, have you come up with anything to kind of get out of this?
The best solutions in extreme situations are unfortunately quite extreme solutions as well. So we need to get rid of the welfare programs, and we need to establish a cultural understanding, because like there's a huge culture crash. It's like two really different culture groups. So there needs to be a cultural understanding established, and we need to seek out these individuals that are violent and extreme, and we need to remove them from society.
Yeah, I think that's you know, as much as in the U.S., there's a huge movement, especially within the libertarians and the ANCAPs, to get rid of police, or at least to replace them with some sort of private police. But I think there's, and it's, you know, it's because of all the abuse that we have in our police system. But yeah. I think there's a pretty clear understanding that when there are people who are violent, who are a threat to society, we do need yeah. some system for removing them, because they're putting everybody at risk. So we need to, you know, we need to take care of that. And it's yeah. kind of, I mean, I want to say it's a shame that now you have so many people in your society that have become a threat to you, but at the same time, it's really good to recognize that these weren't people who traveled, you know, across so many countries to get to where you are because they didn't like you, which is what you yeah. what Americans are afraid of, right? They're going to come here because they don't like us. No, they went there yeah. because they saw the opportunity in that welfare program. They saw it as, hey, go here, get free money. It's actually the same thing we have in Alaska here, where Alaska gives out money to try to get people to go live up there. And of course, it's all snow, so nobody wants to go up there. But yeah, that's really interesting that it's created a problem, and it has forced these two cultures to mix. Now that's going to create more problems of violence and everything. Because I have to imagine that if you, let's say you have a bunch of refugees coming from Syria, I have to imagine that they weren't as violent against each other in yeah. Syria before they left.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, there wouldn't have been that many to come in the first place. But,
yeah, if you look like at the news, in the summer, I saw a lot of articles. They were quite horrible. One of them was like an extremist literally jumped on his sister's face because she said she wanted to become Swedish.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah. Was that happened in Sweden?
Yeah.
And she wanted citizenship, and wow.
Yeah, and the public media didn't even mention it, or what I know.
Wow, yeah, that's...
It was all this independent right-wing media.
What's the... As far as the general population, the Swedish nationals, what's their position on being armed and self-defense and all of that?
Well, there is a group of nationalists that want to acquire arms to start a revolution and overthrow the government and kill these violent extremists. But overall, there is an anti-gun sentiment in this country that's quite strong. So you have like both the left and the right-wing parties opposing guns and like all of the other weapons.
Are they legal? Are they banned? What's the...
Well, the only way to get a rifle is to become a hunter and take the hunter's license, which is quite expensive as well for normal people.
Right, and I can imagine then you're limited to what rifles you can have because they're only for hunting yeah. purposes.
Yeah.
So
you can have like handguns and rifles, and I remember you can have airsoft guns as well, but that's not quite good.
Right, so there's not like a whole lot that you have in terms of self-defense.
No.
That's really interesting. Do you think... What's that?
Yeah. Like even knuckles is outlawed.
Right.
So you have like nothing but your hands to defend yourself.
So do you feel that makes you more vulnerable, or do you think that if guns were legal, then you'd have more of these immigrants who would be using them against you to commit more violence?
No, because they already have these weapons. They already import them. They know how to get them. An AK-47 is $1,000.
So they're basically given free money to buy and import arms from other places, and then...
Yeah, there was like this Swedish guy that became a Muslim, mm-hmm. and he went down to ISIS to fight for the Islamists. And he later said in a public statement, the government paid for my gun.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's, yeah. So, that's really difficult to kind of wrap your head around, because you've got bad people who are armed, you've got good people yeah. who are not armed, and
yeah.
it sounds like of the good people, half of them, kind of just like here in the US, half of them think that if they ban guns, they'll get them away from the bad people, and the other half think that we need more guns so that for the rest of the good people so that you can defend yourself.
Well, that's the problem. That's half, it's almost non-existent. That's like 10% of the population.
Wow. But, so,
yeah.
What about your neighboring countries? How many countries around you are having this same issue?
None.
And is it because they don't have the welfare program, or they have?
No, they do, but they have pretty much closed gates.
Okay.
So they do have these problems, but really low, much lower rate than Sweden has. So Denmark, they threatened to put ISIS members on a barren stone island in the middle of the sea, which I think scared a lot of them off. And in Norway, you have like a very limited immigration, and not many wants to go to Norway as well. So the police don't even have weapons there. And Finland was found to be one of the most racist countries in the European Union. So naturally, there is quite a strong sentiment against immigration in there. But all of them do take these violent extremists in as well. So they do experience these problems. But Sweden is outstanding on this issue.
So they just take in more people, or are they... Are they geographically...
Yeah, Sweden is like letting 500,000 immigrants in this upcoming years.
Are they like letting them in, or like geographically that's just the best place for people to go?
No, but
or they can't
like,
stop them.
They're literally just letting them in.
So they're not even trying.
They don't really do background checks.
I see.
So if you have been a murderer, a rapist, a killer, like any of these, if you fought for ISIS, come on in into a country. But I knew a couple. It's like a Swedish dude and with his Iranian wife, and she got pregnant. And the Swedish government sent her a letter saying she needs to get out of the country.
Because, well, that sounds like they're trying to prevent the anchor baby policy that we have in the US.
So what Sweden is doing, they're taking in these violent extremists and throwing these Muslims that have actually been good with society and wanted to become a part of it. So they're doing the very counterproductive thing.
Right. In the tradition of what government usually does.
Go ahead. Yeah, so like 2 years ago or something like that, a secret document was uncovered. It was an agreement between the Social Democratic Party and the Swedish Islamic Organization. So the treaty said that we will take in more Muslims and more Arabs, and you will instruct them to vote for the Social Democratic Party.
Wow.
So they're taking these violent extremists in on purpose and throwing the people out that love Sweden so they ensure the voters, kind of like the democratic strategy in the United States.
Yeah, that's. I mean, yeah, they're basically willing to have absolute. You know, they're basically willing to import violence and destabilize their own country just so they can get some votes.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And like the court system and all of that has been corrupted as well. Sweden is one of the most corrupt countries in the world and the most corrupt country in the Nordics.
What kind of corruption are we talking about?
So we have like these politicians increasing their pay with like hundreds and hundreds of dollars, while they are decreasing the pensions to just like $800 for some people. So there's like a lot of old folks that are starving to death, they're freezing, they're dying just because of this government corruption. So these government officials are taking the money for themselves from the welfare program, which in turn makes the people suffer.
And this sounds like, you know, to anybody who thinks this doesn't happen in the U.S., look at the Social Security accounts and what's happened with that. The politicians who give themselves raises all the time, maybe not to that same degree, are taking that money from the Social Security program, which now is pretty much insolvent, and they have to keep subsidizing that with taxes. I want to talk about healthcare a little bit, because I know that's you know, a lot of the socialists here always point to Denmark and Sweden and some other places to show how wonderful their healthcare system is. What's your healthcare system like? How does that work?
So it's kind of part of the government welfare. So you pay tax, and whenever you need to go, you go to the public healthcare, and you get treated and all of that. But for like bigger treatments, you actually need to pay extra money as well.
To the same government facilities?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have like these smaller, like private clinics. Mm-hmm. They don't only pay their workers a lot more, but they also have much better healthcare, and a lot of people prefer them. But a lot of people don't even have the money to go to them. I knew one guy. And he said that his granny needed to go change her teeth, and that would cost her $200, even though she paid tax her whole life and sustained the whole system. Mm-hmm. So it's like absurd amounts of money, even though you've been contributing to society for like more than 60 years.
Right. Yeah, and I would imagine it doesn't matter. You know, she could have been healthy her entire life, never went to see a doctor, and she goes once, and it's just because of what it is that they're going to charge her for that. And that was the government clinic.
Yeah.
And so do you know what that would cost if she wanted to go to a private clinic?
Well, it would probably, I am unsure, but it would probably cost about the same because of these taxes on institutions. But overall, these private institutions are much more effective, and they do treat the workers much better, and they're not as understaffed as government ones. So like a lot of doctors are actually going from public to private because of these benefits.
And of course, I can imagine as you're losing doctors from the public sector, you're going to create a shortage, and you're going to have, since obviously they won't raise the prices, they're going to have long lines. Are you already seeing, you know, like long waiting?
We already post that, I guess. So for like 2 years, there was a huge healthcare crisis with a climax in like the early summer, when nobody wanted to become a nurse. So we had these lines so long, the people actually started dying in these lines.
Wow.
And when they came to doctors, they couldn't even help them because they were so busy.
Wow.
So these doctors in these facilities, these nurses, they were so understaffed that they would go to great lengths and do like these cringy recruitment videos in hopes of trying to get new people. But nobody still wanted to become a nurse because of the low wages and the bad labor conditions.
Right. And this is actually, I've got a friend in the Philippines, and I know it's a completely different system, but my friend in the Philippines it's kind of a similar story. He's trained and qualified and certified to be a nurse. But he found another job working, you know, for, you know, not a whole lot of money. Because because of, you know, kind of the same things, the pay, the way you're treated as an employee and all this other stuff. And that's really interesting, because especially since you have a lot of people there who are, you know, they're training to become nurses so that they can move to other countries like the United States and get higher paid jobs here. And it sounds like, you know, it sounds like Sweden would benefit from importing nurses from other places also, but it sounds like based on some of that immigration policy that you have, that wouldn't be, you'd be better coming in as a refugee than you would as somebody who could bring value to the economy.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a female relative that was certified and educated to be one of these, like, not really specialist, but quite a high up doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So she worked for this public sector, and then she realized that the private sector pays much more, and you could work less there, and you could get a lot more benefits from the private sector. So she negotiated a deal with the private clinic that she wouldn't tell anyone, because like a lot of people want to become employees of this private sector. So she jumped off to private sector, and now she is abroad.
Wow.
Seeking more opportunities and higher pay and better conditions than in Sweden.
Right. So do you think that is government doing anything that you know of to limit the growth of this private sector, or to keep the prices high, like limiting the number of doctors and licenses, or nurses and licenses, or facilities?
Well, I am not very well literate on the new policies, but I am quite sure that they have introduced a lot of more regulations, and that they have actually raised the wages and somewhat improved them, but it was quite costly and all of that.
For the public, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But now when you've got like the more right wing voted in their economic policies, so for a time we had right-wing economic policies that actually prioritized healthcare and police, which actually helped stabilize them somewhat. But we still have these huge lines, and they're still understaffed, and the quality is still suffering.
Do you think that There are, because, you know, basically if you're part of this system, it's free for you to go for, you know, for some levels of care. Do you think that there are a lot of people who are just filling up that line with, you know, they have a runny nose, and so they're wasting the doctor's time, they're making the lines longer, they're making it, you know.
No.
You don't think there's any of that? Okay.
In Sweden, there's like, Swedes generally are very afraid of things and very reserved. So they would actually suffer instead of going to a doctor because of shame and because they're afraid. So actually the problem is a lot worse than it actually is, publicly stated.
Okay. So,
so I'm sure like there's a lot of older and younger people staying at home and rather suffering than going standing in these lines and being embarrassed in front of the doctor and all of that.
Interesting. Do you think that has any effects on I guess the national health at all? Like, are things becoming bigger problems because they're not getting treated earlier on, or what's going on there?
Well, it's quite okay, actually. Most of these people are actually benefiting from not going to the healthcare system because the healthcare system is so bad.
Well, do you think it would make things worse if they went?
There might be, but I read this post on Facebook of a Swedish case where an old man was being treated for something, I don't really remember what, and the doctors just put him on the standard diet and just kind of ignored him. He died 3 years later in the same hospital just because the doctors were so ignorant of their own art.
Wow.
The doctors basically let him die, which is quite horrible.
Yeah. Is there, I mean, I just, you know, to be fair to this case, is it something that if, you know, if he hadn't gone there, he would have stayed at home and it would have been the same thing?
Of course it would.
If he got to a real doctor?
For this specific case, it would have been a lot worse for him if he stayed at home. But if these doctors were actually more qualified than they were, he might have actually lived like a decade or so more.
So if maybe he had gone to a private doctor instead of one of the public ones?
If he would have gone to a private one, he might have lived a lot longer, yes.
Interesting. And so this is one of the things I want to point out for our listeners, that remember, he's paying a lot of money his entire life into this system, and if he had been able to save that money on his own, he might have been able to afford going to that private doctor instead and having an extra 10 years added to his life.
Yeah. And so, you've also got these like spoiled and corrupted politicians calling the pensioners, like the old people, a burden.
Mm-hmm.
A burden to society and to welfare, which is quite sad, as they have paid all of these horrendous taxes,
right,
been extorted all these years, and now they're treated like garbage.
Yep. Do they just say that? Do they have, are they trying to do anything about that? Are they trying to...
Well, we had a quite recent reaction. So, because a lot of these pensioners, these old people, have actually been treated like garbage. And they've got, you know, like they paid a lot of taxes and a lot of money to the government and pumped it into the welfare system for their living years. And now they're actually getting less money in return than they would have gotten if they would actually even just stored it away from their pay.
Mm-hmm.
So now they like started an organization called the Pensioners Yellow Vests, and it has like more than 6,000 members right now.
Is that after the French yellow vest?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we had like these just yellow vests. They had like 15,000 members, and they were quite active for half a year, 1 year, and then they kind of died out. But now, like after the summer, the pensioners have come back. They started doing these protests and stuff. And before that, you had the petrol revolution, which was a group of pissed off, like middle and lower class families, because in Sweden we got this huge petrol tax introduced to make up for climate change. And you have like, so to fill up the car, it costs just $100, which is quite much for the average Swedish family. It was a case when the Swedish family couldn't go to like the, what do you call it, like school for toddlers,
the like daycare, kindergarten.
Okay. Yeah, they couldn't even pay the money to travel for kindergarten, home, and work. So they had
so you say like $100 to fill a car. What was it before? Like, did it double?
It was like half the price or something.
Wow. So,
and if we would have gotten rid of all the taxes, it would cost like under $10 to fill the car.
Wow. So you are already paying, so already 80% of that was already tax of the gas. So
yeah,
this is,
it's quite huge.
This is really interesting because, we keep hearing about this in the US. The Democrats keep pushing it. They want, you know, they want carbon taxes. They want all these, you know, the Green New Deal and all this other stuff, and they're pushing for that. They want these same kinds of taxes, but it's interesting to hear that this is, you know, because that's the thing with the Democrats. They always think, oh yeah, it's going to hurt the oil companies, it's going to hurt the billionaires and everything else. And it's like, no, this has already been implemented in other places, and it hurts you.
It hurts these families and like these lower class individuals. It hurts the proletariat. And the oil companies just profit off that because they have like this monopoly on petrol. They're not getting hurt. The people are forced to buy petrol to drive their cars,
right?
Because these electric cars are really expensive still. It's like a million Swedish kronor. Which is more than any Swedish family could even imagine to buy.
I just want to look at this. So, yeah, that's... Oh, no, that's... Swedish krona. Yeah, so that's about one-tenth. So a million kronor is about $100,000.
Yeah.
Which is...
You're just like, you remove a digit.
Right. So is that a fancy electric car, or is that just your average kind of
just the Tesla?
Okay.
The normal Tesla.
So that's like, I think those sell for like what, 30,000 or 50,000 here in the US. So it's like two or three times as much.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's got to do with import taxes and I mean, of course, there's shipping expenses to get it all the way there, but you know, that's not $50,000 worth of shipping.
I've seen a total of 2 or 3 Teslas in my whole life here in Sweden.
Wow.
And like 2 of them were in the big city.
Yeah, so, man, so I guess the lesson to learn from that is, you know, any of these green taxes are actually going to, they're going to make your life miserable, and they're going to prevent you from actually moving into the green energy field.
Yeah.
So
I went to the big city, and I counted like the number of sports cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like about 10 cars in one day that I saw.
like
more fancy car for like upper class, for like upper middle class. So, and then I went to England in like the London area. I was like shocked. It's like more than 30 cars.
Of what kind?
Of like the, well, the more expensive, like fancy sports cars.
Like Ferrari, BMW,
Well, yeah, more
Corvettes.
like the BMWs,
Okay.
like the more expensive BM.
So you saw some of those. What about, so you saw some of those, but not the electric cars.
No, I've seen more sports cars than electric cars.
Right. So yeah, that's really interesting, and we've always, I mean, I guess, here in the US, electric cars used to be really expensive. Like the first one that came out was the Saturn, and it was like a little tiny thing, right? It was nothing fancy, no technology, and it was still pretty expensive for what it was. Now you compare that to like some of the Teslas, what you would pay out here, and they're still kind of expensive, but they're luxury cars, right? And so it's interesting to see that you're still finding more of those, more of the luxury cars, than the electric cars because of those, I guess, taxes on that.
So, like long term, a Tesla would be quite a good investment because the government is like really subsidizing energy, like electricity and all of that. So, long term, you would save on fuel, but really short term, it's a really stupid decision because like you don't really have that high of a pay in Sweden.
Right. Well, so let's talk about that let's call it a hypothetical long term, because this is one of the things we look at in the US is, yeah, you don't have to buy gas, but you still have to buy electricity, and if everybody starts using electricity to run their cars, you're going to increase demand on electricity, you're going to force the price up there.
Like at the same time, we are m meeting a high electricity demand. So the only viable solution of it for it is like either more nuclear stations or like a lot of those of more water gen electricity generating stations. But
What
Sweden is
are
not doing any of it, and instead they're buying energy generated by coal from Germany and energy generated by gas from Russia.
Wow. Is that their main source of energy from those two?
No, the main source of energy is actually nuclear.
Okay. And that's
It's
produced in Sweden?
50% of the energy output in the country.
Okay. So yeah, that's interesting. And it's so how do people feel about nuclear over there?
Well, it's kind of like divided 50-50.
All
But I
right.
guess like the anti-nuclear has a bit stronger position because we have shut down three reactor stations.
Oh wow. And is it, the same kind of thing in the US where they're afraid of meltdowns, they're afraid it's toxic waste and all this other stuff?
Yeah, a lot of kids in school are being taught that nuclear is the worst energy on the planet
Oh
as
wow.
well. So from a very young age. So I was told it was the worst kind of ge energy generating. I was told it was worse than coal.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think when I was in school, that was in the 90s. I want to say that they were telling us that it was actually really good. But yeah, I mean, there is a lot of sentiment here now that says it's bad, it's dirty, it's
Well, they
dangerous.
did say that it's like it has a good output, but they also came with the meltdowns and like the toxic waste and all of that, and
Right.
said it's better to not bother and just go with solar and wind.
Right, but those don't really put out that much
No.
for.
We have quite a huge output from wind, but nuclear is still the one that's dominating. And without nuclear, there would be no Sweden at all, basically.
Wow.
Would be kicked back to like the 90s or something like that.
Right. Wow. All right, well, let's see. We're coming up on an hour, but
Yeah.
is there these are all really interesting issues, and it's interesting to see, where you are in comparison to the
Yeah.
US and all the problems it's creating. But is there anything interesting you want to talk about before we go?
Well, yes, you have the police as well. You have
Okay.
like all of these public systems that are failing, basically. So the police is not only quite low quality, they prioritize like teenagers driving around on these mopeds at a slightly higher pace rather than rapes and theft and all of that. So
Right.
really, you'd be hunted for driving over the speed limit in the city, but you'd be like under prioritized if you killed people.
Yeah, that seems to be a lot of
Es yeah,
very
and
similar to the US.
especially if you're an immigrant.
Wow.
Because like these immigrants, they do get greatly reduced sentences,
Oh, wow, really?
especially in rape cases where they could be like just 2 months in jail.
Is that because I heard something about somebody who they raped somebody and then they got a reduced sentence because the judge said that that's what they were used to in their culture.
Yeah,
Was that there?
that yeah, it does happen.
Wow.
And there's been a, it's like the legal system has been crap for a long time.
And what kind of judges are making these? Are they part of that Islamic group that you were talking about? Are they part of the Democrats?
Lot of these judges are left-leaning. And so, but they don't actually decide on the laws. The ones that decide the law is the parliament. And the parliament is majority left wing.
So
So,
have they actually created a law that says if you're Muslim, then
they, no, not really. They have created a law that says if you can't read the law, you get a reduced sentence because you did not know.
oh.
It was not on public news, of course, but it was on this independent media.
I mean, I get where that comes from because that was, this comes from the idea of kings and tyrants would write laws that could not be read or understood. They'd put them at the top of posts where people couldn't read them, and then they could just go around arresting people for anything, and nobody would know that they even broke the law. So I
Yeah.
get that, but at the same time, you would think, especially if this became an epidemic, as it
Yeah.
sounds like it is, you would think that somebody would just say, okay, look, let's put a, do what they do in Mexico and stick a speaker on top of a car, playing a message that says you're not allowed to rape, that's illegal here, drive it around these neighborhoods so that people hear
Yeah.
it, so that you can no longer use that as an excuse to get out of that, because that's, I mean, that just seems like, the simplest solution, but really, like, looking at laws, we should understand that if you're speeding on a moped, you're not harming somebody. If you're raping somebody, you
Yeah.
should know that that is an you're harming somebody. You're physically creating violence against somebody, and you should know that. We call it common sense. If somebody doesn't understand that, okay,
Yeah.
fine. But those are things like you don't even need somebody to write on a piece of paper and say this is the law. Those are
Yeah,
things that
right.
you should just be able to look at and say, yes, you harm somebody.
But like the thing is in like the war zone in the Syria and all of that, there's like no, like, there's no morale, there's no law because of this war zone. So a lot of people that would recently took in actually think that it's okay to rape and murder and pillage.
Wow.
So you had like these, a lot of these stupid excuses in court after someone, after an immigrant raped someone, when one of them was like, she had a short skirt, so she wanted it. And that's how we do it in my culture and like all of that.
Wow. Man, that's, yeah, I mean, there's so much to say about that, and it's,
yeah,
it's, I, 'cause you know what, when people talk about socialism and communism and how it takes hold of a country is to grow and destroy the culture and the law within a country and to create chaos so that government has an excuse to come in with an iron fist and say, we need to just control everything. And it sounds like that sounds like what's going on, because it's, you look at this stuff and you're like, no sane person could allow things to happen in this order unless that was their intent to create some degree of chaos so that they could say, you know, look, we need, you know, whatever it may be, total socialism or communism to come in to fix this problem. It's the only way.
Yeah, or even fascism, because like,
right,
the Social Democrats don't care about the ideology anymore. They just care about power, raw power.
Right.
So yeah, my theory is, the, you know, like the paper, the agreement from 1970 where they said they would import Muslims. I believe they're now opening up the gates to get in all of these voters to stay in power and all of that. And when the country descends into almost a chaotic state, they would go say, we're going to militarize the police to keep the order and upkeep the law and the power of the state. And once they have these like heavily militarized police, they're going to seize power and go to a totalitarian reign.
Right.
But the Social Democrats kind of fucked up. Because what the polls are saying now is that the Swedish Democrats, they're like the National Socialist Conservatives, is going to be the biggest party. So they're kind of actually losing control even more, even with these new voters.
Interesting. So, yeah, and it, you know, it's also interesting to see this because there's two things I want to point out. Is one, you've always got the politicians who are the ones who are going to stay in power, and they live in their safe communities outside of the city with their militarized police protection, and you know, they're safe. They don't mind if they're surrounded by chaos. If they are the leaders of the political party that's supporting all of the violence and chaos, because those people are not going to attack their own leaders, right? It's like if Bernie Sanders were, for example, to, you know, totally destabilize the country, none of the people that supported that would turn their back on him because he's like their leader. He helped them all, he helped this thing happen.
He's like, he becomes like a god,
right?
Like Stalin or Mao or Hitler or like any of those.
But at the same time, and maybe this is just short-sightedness, but let's put your head in a place of, okay, there's this big country with millions of people and I want to come in and I want to take total control of it so that I can be wealthy and powerful and have all these wonderful things and have servants and all this other stuff. Why would you want to do it in this way? Because you're, you know, when a country descends into chaos like that, its economic output drops to like nothing. I mean, if you look at like North Korea, right? Kim Jong-un, what he has compared to what normal people in other countries have is not that great. And it's because the people in his country they're not able to communicate with the outside world. They're not allowed to import information to better their technology. They're not willing to be as productive because they're not being rewarded for how productive they are. And especially if you talk about if they were at total war with each other also, then it would be even less. So I don't know what anyone's possible desire could be in that, except for to just be absolutely ignorant of the results of what their actions are going to be.
Yeah, but people like that don't really care if they get 1 million or 100 million in the end. They just want to get it fast,
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Because if you go from, let's say, nothing to 1 million, that's, you're still much higher than you were.
Yeah. If it takes you like a day to get the 1 million, opposed to 10 years to get the 10 million, it's quite a leap.
Right. Yeah. No, that's an interesting way to look at it. All right. Well, it's been great talking with you. I'm not going to hold you up any longer. Yeah. I know we've both got stuff to get back to, but it's really been great talking with you, and thank you for taking the time. I think I definitely learned a lot about Sweden, and hopefully my listeners have too. Is there anything you want to say before we go?
Yeah, I really hope a lot of Americans, especially on the left, do realize that Swedish... like the Swedish system, the Nordic model is failing. And even though Denmark is doing decent, they are not socialist. They have the Nordic model. But even the Nordic model, which is a bit socialistic, is still failing and is still being betrayed by these public servants and by government in general. So you just, with all of these socialist programs and like all of these government intervention and all of that, you're just going to create misery and tyranny. You're going to be much better off if you just tell them to go somewhere else.
Right. All right. Well, is taxation theft?
Of course it is.
All right. It's been awesome talking with you. We'll have you on again sometime, and we'll definitely stay in touch. And until next time, taxation is theft.
Yeah. See ya.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Rhodes.